Hey, Bill and Gutter, welcome to Blackpool Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today as we broadcast right across the skies of the world, thanks to modern day technology, the internet, and our friends at Bumblebit Media 98.7 FM. If you're listening outside of the Indigenous Territory, that is, you're probably listening it via NIRS, which is the National Indigenous Radio Service, which operates inside of the Commonwealth of Australia. Anyway, we're going to be talking about a number of things today, and I thought it might be a good opportunity to refresh the minds of people of why the Yidinji government exists and the international norms that allow the Yidinji nation to move forward and express itself how it wishes. And today I'm joined by Yirilam and Ganyara here in the studio today, and I guess it's been an interesting a week or so. The politics is still inside of Australia. The dust is still settling, and Jacinta now is moving to become the deputy leader of the Liberal Party, and she'll be the golden girl because, you know, I think most of the people in that type of leaning prefer her to Lydia Thorpe, let's say, or Mulindiri McCarthy. But at the end of the day, Ganyara, it's interesting to see anyway.
Look, always remember that's Australian politics all over. And there has a recorded history, by the way, of the colonial world utilising native troopers to go out and assassinate or knock down the tribes, you know, wipe them out. It was genocide. So that is still an ongoing issue because, you know, there's a lot of, I suppose, issues around the likes of Jacinta Price, who really should be standing up for their nation's sovereignty, you know, where they come from. Lydia's a bit of a firebrand one, you know. Once again, she's outspoken and doing the Australian thing. So I'm very wary of who's doing what. But remember, that's all inside Australia. If you read the Uluru Statement where it says coexisting sovereignties, remember, the Australian Crown is one side of the coexisting sovereignty. The other side are the Aboriginal nations that they talk about in Uluru that were here first, the ones that are still continuing, the ones that own the place. So that's the other half of the coexisting sovereignty, which sort of defies logic to me as to why people of Aboriginal heritage want to maintain their Australian or their colonial connection when they could really go back to being the true and correct owners of their country pursuant to the original laws that were on that country before the colonial world you know, settled here. So that's a very... Why are they staying inside Australia? Is it the glory? Is it the ego? Is it the money? What is it really? When they can really go back and become the true and correct authority on their part of the world and based on laws that Australia cannot alter or affect. You know, this is the important part. And I see so many. There's academics, there's politicians, there's, you know, hard-working CEOs of companies that are all of Aboriginal heritage. And yet they could go back to their country and do exactly what Yidinji is doing. And what lets Yidinji do this? You know, this is the international world recognise our authority to do it because a document was written, you know, UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, and I ask everyone, why was that document written when it looks to be a national suicide document, you know, for nations, for countries?
Colonial nations.
Colonial nations, absolutely. Oh, there was four of them that rejected it outright, refused to even want to talk about it. They said, no, we will not support it at all. US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, four colonial countries. Why would they reject it? But the big question is, why did they then accept it?
Yeah, I mean, these are things where they have to acknowledge that, and they do. They acknowledge that there are people here and, you know, they ask for welcome to countries. I'm sure they're... these things have some sort of background to them, but ultimately, if someone supports Israel's right to self-determination or Palestine's right to self-determination, then surely the Yidinji nation has a right to self-determine, and the international community have all through the international labour protocols and now UNDRIP, even though it's non-binding, they're talking about something that has power and authority and land and the ability to create law. And that's exactly what the Yidinji nation is moving forward on.
It's non-binding if you're a citizen of the UN member state. However, it's the intention of the document. Remember that it's intention. The intention was to talk about someone else. that are not part of the UN, so it can't be binding on them over there. What it's talking about, though, is their rights and abilities to go and do what they've got to do. And when you talk about self-determination, and I'm glad you brought up Welcome to Country, because that's another part of this statement that you're talking about laws that are separate to the UN, separate to Australia. It's the laws and protocols of a nation that make the nation the nation. That's the sovereignty of the nation, the laws that are agreed upon by the society. And guess what? In Yidinji, women don't speak for country. Men do. Women have connection. They've got their roles inside Yidinji law, inside the Yidinji society. But women do not speak for country. That's actually, if they try and do that, they're breaching the ancient old protocols that go back thousands upon thousands of years. Because women never had to defend the country like the men did. Men had to go and lay down their life for the country. So men speak for country. There is, by the way, one of the elders' meetings going back 2011 or 12, somewhere there, there were where all the elders come together that were wanting to be part of this Yidinji government world. They all agreed and they all signed off on a determination said women do not speak for country. But not just one, this was all the clans that wanted to come into this. Those who wanted to participate in revitalising the world. Under the direction or the guidance that's issued by UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, it says you've got the right to self-determination, not under Australian law, Yidinji law. You've got the right to go and revitalise all this stuff, bring back the institutions. So that would mean bring back the government, that would mean bring back the justice system, the courts, that would mean bring back the punishment for anyone who breaches the protocols of the government that are formed to give this society a system to govern itself by, the one the native title determinations talk about.
Yeah, I think it's really important to remind everyone that the sovereign Yidinji government is not tribal law. The tribal law simply agreed those men and the women that support those men by going to that declaration or determination point under that tree that you filmed many years ago, that was filmed many years ago, and the documentation that support all that, simply created the sovereign Yidinji government as the international mouthpiece or its voice on a global scale, because Australia cannot speak for the Yidinji nation. Indigenous Australians cannot speak for the Yidinji nation. Someone holding an Australian identity cannot speak for the Yidinji nation. So it has to be created here. And if people can't get that through their minds, then, you know, they're actually acting outside of that law. And that's a very dangerous place to be because we certainly understand that here. My allegiance is to the elders of this nation. God first, very important. Elders second. And then this nation through the government is where we operate the office. If anyone is operating outside of that structure, then fair enough, that's fine. We can't force people to be part of it. But if they don't want to be part of it, then go your own merry way, and if you're acting as an Australian, be a great Australian. Win Australian of the Year award, as far as I'm concerned. Vote for whoever you like. That's a very important thing. And even support Yidinji if you can. That's fine too. But the protocols and the process is very, very clear. The international law community and the United Nations understand it, and the Yidinji nation is leading the way in all levels of governance, because it's one of the very first to come out of the blocks. It is showing leadership. And thank you to the elders and those families that have supported this from the very beginning, well before I got involved. And thank you for the continued support of the elders that continue to support it today.
Look, the big thing with this is that everyone must remember a very simple thing. A tribe is one or more. You know, so you can wipe out 99.9% of the tribe. As long as there's one left alive, the tribe is still alive. It doesn't matter. So, you know, like when we first set out these determinations going back, you know, a while now, it was multiple families. It was multiple areas. You know, it was the people from Jabiraquara, the ones from, you know, one year down the bottom, you know, they were from the valley, from up the tableland, from down here in Cairns. They were everywhere. They all come together to sign off on these determinations. So you could take, as long as there's one clan, one family, they're like cantons. The family or the clan is like clan, is a canton of an area. It's a designated area. So, as you know, if Say, for example, you know, one Tablian wanted to leave. They can't affect the continuation of the Yidinji government. Just because they pull out means absolutely nothing to the existence of the government. The government was set up for a reason so we could interact, the tribe could interact with the Commonwealth of Australia or another UN member state. It's an interaction vehicle only. So if the government gets wiped out by everyone withdrawing, and I mean everyone, then the government is dead. But while there is one mob, one clan, one canton still alive, still wanting to continue this, the government will be here. Now, this is the important part. It could lead to tribal conflict, which is rather sad, but understand what the protocols are. Men speak for country. And then to be speaking for country, you've got to have unbroken, and I mean unbroken, male connection. Can't go through a mother, or can't go through a grandmother, or can't go through a great-grandmother. It can't divert away from male, 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 male. To do otherwise would be to break the protocols of our nation, of that original tribe. It would be breaching that, has serious ramifications. And that's why you come to welcome to country. I'm glad you mentioned that. Who can welcome who to country? Can Australians welcome other Australians into Yidinji territory? Remember, coexisting sovereignty. There's two lots here. But there are the Australians that want to welcome Australians in are in one sovereignty. They've got no right to talk about someone else's country. So, no, they can't. You know, you've got to have proper connection to speak for country, to welcome the Australians in, to welcome the foreigners in. I heard on the radio the other day that the welcome to country ceremony is getting very tedious to the Australians. They're getting sick of it. They're getting jack of it. Australians welcoming Australians. They should leave it for foreigners when foreign nations come in. They're talking about football, I think it was, about when, like, the Maoris, the New Zealanders come, the All Blacks come to play football here in Australia. Leave, you know, let's have a welcome to country there. You're welcome into this world. Think about what was said. It's international. It's foreign. Who's foreign to Australia? Yidinji is. And we'll welcome the Australians in if we see fit, if we think they're suitable to have a welcome to country, if they're going to act in good faith. Maybe they would be then like to have a welcome to country. Maybe they would be welcome. But what about if they're not? And this is what most people can't understand. It's the Yidinji nation and its true elders that do welcome to country, not, you know, you go around, I see other people where there's young kids, unless they've been authorised to do welcome to country, then that's just an insult to the laws that they talk about under the coexisting sovereignty.
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand the differences between welcomes, acknowledgements and all those things. We've been pulled in last minute to do some of those things, and always we try and find an elder or, you know, in this, most cases we can call them Bumi. Whose father's father's father, as far as we know, is Yidinji Yidinji all the way. But colonisation has created several problems for the societies on this continent, Yirralum, and sometimes these things can be lost, to act Australian is far more easier than it is to uphold the original laws. And there is a temptation because money can be made from that. We know that people need money. Obviously, it gives you choices. But ultimately, you can't really sell out the tribe or something that's been here since the very beginning just for your own ego or personal gathering of wealth. And that can be. I'm not saying people are doing that. But that can be one of the, impacts of colonisation is that people will, you know, if you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah, like, you know, you look at the colonising countries or nations who have colonised other nations over the last few hundred years or several hundred years or even longer. And in comparison to how do they operate? You know, if you go back far enough, you'll probably find that they did operate somewhat similar to the way Yidinji does, where the elders are the authorities and have the authority to make decisions and create laws and standings and so forth under the creator. And but that's no longer the case for many colonising nations. Now, you look, England came here, and realistically, at this stage in time, they are governed by politics. It's not elders making the decision in a lot of these colonies. I think America's probably the same. They really rely on their politics and their voting system. And the voting system doesn't really create elders. It creates a majority opinion. Elders don't come from opinions. They come from that knowledge, that deep, rich long-lasting, thousands of years. So we've still got that here, and a lot of the other places that have colonised no longer have that whale system. So we, like you pointed out before, we are not the tribal authority. We sit under them. We are compliant to what we are told to do by the tribal authority, and it's their laws and decisions that allow us to represent them.
Exactly, and make it very, very clear that my father is not a Yidinji man. That's very clear. So if that is the protocol, which it has been since the very beginning, it's why someone like the chief minister is held by Bumi or someone with whose father's Yidinji, and I think that's quite appropriate, Ganyara. These things are genealogies are there to protect the society, and for whatever reason, God has determined that this is the way it's done here, and it's to protect the society. It's not to actually undermine it or to shortchange it, and I think that's what's really important. The wisdom of the elders is coming very, very clear through this process. And the design that they have created, not me, not you, not anyone else, they did it. And that's very important to be aware of, because you don't want to offend that or undermine it.
I wonder why they done it. You know, have a guess. Maybe they wanted to prevent conflict, they wanted to prevent argument. That would undermine a nation, would undermine a society, would undermine the whole tribal thing. If people who, under our protocols and laws, can't speak for country, maybe there would be other agendas. Maybe there'd be other issues. You know, maybe there's money involved. We just don't know. But it would undermine the structure, the integrity of the nation. So they done it for a reason. There was a very good reason. The men had to go out and actually fight for the country. They had to put their life on the line for the nation, for the country. And that gave them the right to speak for country. But it had to be an unbroken connection. It couldn't be a, you know, Australia have legislation in place in the Constitution where they you can't have a foreign allegiance and yet take part in Australian politics. You know, this was going back, what, Section 44, which was aired recently or a couple of years ago. And I think there was Larissa Waters, she was one of them, had to prove her background, her allegiance to Australia. Malcolm Roberts, you know, he had to prove his allegiance to Australia.
Scott Ludlam, I think, was the other one.
Yeah, there was a few there. So they had to prove their allegiance because they held citizenship somewhere else, or they had in the past had citizenship somewhere else. They had to prove, no, they've broken away from that and they're now Australia only. So this is very important stuff. It's not only in our part of the world, it's in all over the world. And this allegiance to the territory, you know. You know, if we didn't have this stuff in place, maybe people would sell out, you know. And you see a lot of talk going on, you know, I see Jacinda Price saying that the Aboriginal people should be thankful. There was that Bev MacArthur, I think she was a Victorian MP, said the Aboriginal people should be thankful that they've got running water. Be thankful for colonisation or colonialism. You get running water and you get hospital and you get electric lights and you get all this good cool stuff. Hang on a sec, the Aboriginal people would have had running water going past their doorstep, they would have had food laid on, they would have had all their traditional medicines, they had everything laid on. And yet the colonial world said, oh, you should be part of us. And that's why I'm saying you get the native troopers that want to go out and assassinate the tribe, you know, so they come into the Australian world, come into the Australian realm to be thankful for this colonialism that's here. So It's the tribe has reasons to have protocols in place. It has, and this was discussed at the determinations that were made up there on the table and under the mango trees with all the elders, you know. What rules are we going to apply first? Because there was conflict back then even. There was massive conflict about women standing up to talk about country. And all the men were very cranky about that. They said, this is not how it was. You know, this was the old people who understood the law. You know, some of them have passed on, sadly. That's just the way life is. That's why we put it in paper. That's why they signed their name to it. These are proper law holders that put their mark on the paper to say, no, this is the way it is to prevent future argument. But the government, the Yidinji government, does not see gender. It sees pieces of paper. It's those old men and women that were where there is gender applied. So at a government level, that's all just citizen stuff, all just paper stuff. It's representative of, though, those old people who do speak for country, those people who are connected to country. So there's a big difference between connection and speaking for, huge difference. You know, anyone can be a Yidinji citizen, anyone. If they meet the criteria, be a Yidinji citizen. And that includes, you know, if you might have married out of the tribe, like I talked about on another show, a couple of the bloodline family members up there had married out. And it was adios goodbye. You know, the women, when they married away, they had to leave the law behind. They had to leave the sovereignty of Yidinji behind to go to where they'd married into. But to get them back, for them to come back, they had to do proper tribal initiation, or tribal adoption. They had to be adopted in properly by those who could do it, not just some gammon make believe. You know, I'm acting as an elder. I'm going to act as this. Meanwhile, no one else in the tribe recognises them as elders. You just can't say I am if the rest of the tribe don't recognise it. This is the important part, to say I am. Hang on a sec, that doesn't cut it. Even in the Australian world, with their three-part test, you know, for Aboriginal identity, the rest of the tribe must acknowledge that you are part of it or you're not part of it. Which one, you know? So if you're going to go out and breach these protocols, you know, and that's what would have happened if these people would have come back in off the island, said, no, we're your dingy. No, they would have said, hang on a sec, the rest of the tribe don't see that. You're just gammon now and you may be liable for punishment, you know, which is pretty serious stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you can imagine, if we can pretend for a minute that I was an Australian, let's say, and I became the Prime Minister, and I was of Aboriginal descent, but I saw it fit in the national interest to sell and to all the parcels of Yidinji land and this, that, and the other, and whatever it may be, off to international buyers many other things, and that impacted the Yidinji Nation. I have no allegiance to them whatsoever because they're under my law. And Australians voted me in. So I have the mandate or the authority power to create and act on those things. This is where even if I had that authority and power, I cannot, as an Australian Prime Minister, override the Yidinji tribe. The tribal law is it. I am the belligerent occupier. And if it's worse for me to go against that because that's God's design. If you go anywhere around this planet, the elders are the ones that hold the knowledge, the wisdom, and they pass it on to the younger generation, and there is a protocol. It's different all around the world, but here, if your father's not Yidinji, you can't speak for country under tribal protocol. I'm not making that up. I never made that up. You want to say something? You're just stretching. So that's what I'm saying about even if I did become powerful and almighty inside of Australia, I had a big name, let's say, pretend, and I was doctor this and PhD this and that, GST, DVO, whatever, you know, I still can't override the Yidinji tribe. And the Council of Elders are the ones that we're responsible to, the ones that created everything. That's the boss. End of game, shop shut.
Even the UN can't control it. This is the crazy part. Even at the UN level, because we're not a member state of the UN, Australia is, and it's governed by international law. And they're talking about someone who's not governed by international law, not governed by Australian law, not governed by anything, by their own laws and protocols, their own customs. That's the important part.
Donald Trump, Pope Leo, no one. And it is really important to understand that. When you understand the whole globe and what's going on, not even they can override the Yidinji tribe. As much as they would love to, or maybe not love to, I don't know what their intentions are, they cannot do that. Even if they wanted to or didn't want to, they still can't do it.
Look, at the time, Gunjarabai was appointed to go forward and notify the world Yidinji's back. And we went around, we went around for years, talking with all the local mob to come to this conclusion, this finale part, to get Yidinji back in order and get his government in place and do stuff. And guess what? We rode off to the likes of kings and queens, the popes, the whole box and dice, right down to the local policeman, right down to the local one. Mail went everywhere, globally. If you've got a say on our country, have your say now, or we will take it that you can't talk about our country, because you can't. You're talking about us, who are the original owners, the coexisting sovereignty, the sovereignty that was here before the white fellas come, the sovereignty that was never ceded, or extinguished. The white fellas couldn't do it. The colonial world couldn't do it. So Australia, if you want to be inside Australia as an Aboriginal person, good. I don't mind. I really appreciate that you're at least being honest and upfront with it while you're there. But why aren't you supporting your country? Why aren't you going back to the sovereignty that coexists with, you know, of the Australian Crown? Because, as you said, if you want to be the Prime Minister of Australia, you're bound by the sovereignty of the Crown, the Australian world, the one that coexists with the sovereignty of the Yidinji Nation, for example.
Yeah, that fictitious one. With fictitious money that people love and they understand it. And anyway, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today from the city of Gimoy, the original name for this place here, Gimoy Bra, and we'll be back after the break.
dugunda kalakapa ngabi mekabula china yupapa tiji kunga yarawa unja ngabi baringi jugugo
Welcome back. It's been a wonderful program today because we're just reasserting the belief and the knowledge that the elders have actually placed into this whole place. And Ganyara, we were just chatting here before off air about the importance of why this office exists.
It was put here in Gimoi for a reason. Majority of Yidinji are here in this big area, this big city. When Gunjarabai was passing away, when he was in his last stages of life, Gudju Gudju was called up. Said, look, Gudju Gudju, I'll hand you the ball for a while. It's not your ball to play with. Well, I'll hand you the ball to initiate the office in the good city of Gimoi. But it was not his, it's not his office. It's not his thing. The thing was that you play with the ball for the whole majority of Yidinji here where we can be represented, where when dignitaries come to this area, they normally come to Cairns. They don't come to some backwater up on the tableland or over it, like, you know, out in the bush somewhere. They don't want to go there because they don't have that connection, you know, that to where they're security. So they come to Gimoi, to Cairns. You know, we'll call it Cairns when dignitaries come to Cairns, you know, the Prime Minister, whatever. He's not going to go to Tolga or to one of them other little places out the way. So we're here. This is the reason why it's here. And the whole lot agreed at the time that this is where the main office was going to be at this stage until an office is built, a real considerable office is built or a parliament is built and established. So it could be established later on over on the coast somewhere or it could be up on the tableland, it could be anywhere. But at present, it's here in Cairns, in Gimoi, for the sole reason that is the majority of Yidinji are here, the majority of people here, the majority of dignitaries that come to this part of the world come to here. So they've got access to the office. But it's not about just being Gimoi. He was told that you don't speak for Tableland, you don't speak for the other mob on the Wajanbara mob, you don't speak for the Valley mob, you don't speak. But you remember that you only speak for your part of the world at a tribal level, but you're representing the nation as a whole, and your representation as a whole has to comply by the agreements of each of those clans, those cantons. And if those cantons don't agree with what you're doing, they will pull you into line. So if you're trying to take over, like, say you said Bumi's now the chief minister, what would happen? What would happen if he tried to take over the government? First up, Tableland would pull out. They would go their own merry way on the act of sovereignty. They would assert their sovereignty. And they would sort of go and approach all the elders to come together again to talk about what's going on. Why is Bumi trying to take over the whole world down here? Why is he trying to talk for country up there on Tableland? Why is he trying to take over? Okay, let's disband that then. Let's sink him. So they can do that. And the government will never be dead while one of the cantons, one of the clans, are speaking of a country in proper male connection. So while that's going on, Yidinji government's going to be here. And this was set up for a reason. It's underneath the tribe to prevent the silly stuff happening where it may be compromised, where the government may go berserk and try and sell off Tableland country, for example. It can't happen. The Tableland will pull out, they'll go our own way, and we will still act as sovereign part of the world, but only representing our area.
Yeah, and that's fine too. I mean, you know, when I've met the various elders and young people from various clan groups, they're very respectful of that. And I think there may be a temptation to move away from that, but that's usually in the Australian realm that has sort of some sort of economic benefit from it. And we know that that's not the right way. So I think it's very important that the elders have made that position very clear to all and sundry. And Gigi was amazing. He was fantastic at that. He was a very good listener and leader. And same with Bumi, I can say that for sure. He represents Gimobra and very well in that, I've seen him do talks and speeches and he speaks from the heart. And, I've seen the family trees and I had the pleasure of seeing that in a private capacity. Some of the things that he's shared and taken me on walks and others as well to various places, and that's a lovely thing. And he's a wonderful man and the right kind of person you'd want at the helm for where we are at the moment.
I'll give you a perfect example of where things go wrong. The Voice referendum a few years back. Think about that. They were all saying The Voice is going to be the Aboriginal people's voice or representation to the government in accord with Article 19 of UNDRIP. This was going to be their body as representation. You know, they're going to represent their Aboriginal people. Good go, they were Australians that voted in The Voice. The Australians that cannot affect our sovereignty. Our voice will be through the Foreign Minister, to the Foreign Minister of Australia. We're foreign to them. We can't have a voice inside their parliament. That would be like the Chinese. That would be like the Chinese having a voice inside our parliament.
Well, you know, let's, UNDRIP, what does it stand for? You know, United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. The I stands for Indigenous.
And peoples. Didn't they say Indigenous Australians?
There is Indigenous Australians, but they don't have any connection to land. There is, of course, many, many nations on this continent all have connection to land. And we're talking about an international document here, which is legal. And so to participate, you have to have a legal standing. You have to have a construct which is legal, which the Yidinji elders allow the Yidinji government to be set up as a legal entity. So, you know, how can they possibly have a voice talking to themselves?
And didn't John Howard a few years back say, a nation does not treaty with itself? Of course he said that. You know, this is the legit stuff. We aren't, the Yidinji is foreign to Australia. It can't have a voice in the Australian Parliament. It has a voice to the Australian government because they are on our country. They have trespassed on our country. They haven't settled here properly. They haven't got permission to be here. I wonder why we do welcome to country to the Australians, but it's got to be in the correct standing. This is what...
Communication can only be through a treaty.
Oh, I wonder what they're talking about now after this election. So stuff is going on. So the original voice model was wrong, definitely wrong, because they were Indigenous Australians that were going to have the voice for the Aboriginal people whose sovereignty is outside of their jurisdiction. You know, this is how crazy it is. I wonder what the new model of the voice is going to be.
Well, that remains to be seen, but I guess one of the things now where we can focus our attention to is UNDRIP, because the while it was a, let's say, what was the term inside of Australia there, an aspirational document, I guess, the thing is that if you aspire to treat people equally, or you aspire to take your wife out once a week to a nice place, and you know, and if you don't do them, she's going to get upset. You're not really acting in good faith there. You know, Australia didn't have to sign off on this UNDRIP document, but they did. And there's a reason why, Gagnaro, is because even they cannot, just like Pope Leo and Donald Trump, Albanese, the whole lot, they cannot interfere with this law system. And if the law system creates its legal entity, like the SYG, for example, then fair enough.
It took them 2 years to see the error in their ways. They refused in 2007. No, we're not going to support it. 2009, they changed their mind. Why did they change their mind? Because they knew that they didn't have the correct sovereignty to be here. They didn't have the correct foundation of the Commonwealth of Australia. The world had to decolonise in 1960, and it did. They started to pack up all their junk, and it finally left in 1986. They took their junk back to the UK. But they left the place without an administration or without some form of governance over the place. So they had to fill in as administrators. So they did, and they held on, and they held on. Now they're sort of saying, well, we're the boss now, and we'll just take over. No more. That's why the voice come about. That's why the recognition of Aboriginal people into the Australian Constitution, I think there was an Act 2013. You know, why were they trying to bring about all this stuff when they know that now the sovereignty of the Aboriginal people is still unceded, unextinguished? But the only reason it's unceded, unextinguished is because the tribe has to be in their correct protocol, their correct capacity, their correct standing to do anything. And if you're going to do it as an Australian, Indigenous Australian, and try and give a voice to those Aboriginal mob over there, you've got even the constitutional lawyers are saying it can't be done. It cannot be done. You've got to be in your correct standing and capacity of the nation. Oh, that means the legal identity. Now, we're getting into the science of law now, all the make-believe stuff, the gammon stuff. It's all make-believe in our minds, but it's real in their world. Where's the Commonwealth of Australia? It's a piece of paper hanging on the wall. Hang on, where's your dingy government? It's a piece of paper hanging on a wall. But where's your dingy territory? It's here. Where's Australia's territory? It ain't here. This is your dingy. But you have to be in your true and correct capacity. You know, you can't be there as an Australian saying, this is my territory. Welcome to my part of the world. Good go, because you've broken every protocol. It's about the pieces of paper. You've broken every protocol of your dingy. And guess what? There are serious repercussions if you start to break the old protocols, the old laws. And I mean LAWS, not LORE. This is LAW. And I wonder what penalty was for claiming someone's country. There were spears involved. There were sharp sticks. There were big sticks. Guess what would happen to those if I come down here to try and claim this part of the world down here? I'd deserve every stick that beat me. I'd deserve it. You know, so that's why no one's going up there to claim Tableland area. Come up, we'll try the sticks out. You know, this is the old law that's unseated, unextinguished. And we've got to respect that, because that creates the nation, that creates the sovereignty of the nation that coexists with Australia. It can't be done by Australians.
Yes, and you don't want to get hit by a stick. My grandmother used to make me go and pick my stick. And you should go and get a stick and I'm going to whack you with it. So, of course, I went for the being stupid at that time. Went for the thin and long one, thinking that it was going to snap, but when it was quite whipping, it hurt. So I learned back then not to interfere with the law too much. And I can safely say that, you know, I haven't been hit by a stick since. But all those types of things are there for a reason. And in a good way, if people are, you know, really interested in what we're talking about, then go and talk to the elders about the tribal law. It's something that they delight in, actually, and they're happy to really and proud of it in that sense. And I hope and pray that a majority of people do that, because it is a wonderful thing. It, you know, the role of kings and in the Yidinji society or those in power is to keep the peace. And they've done that here for a very long time, and it's time to reassert that. It's very simple. It's at a stroke of a pen. There's no machine guns. There's no bombing buildings. There's none of that kind of rubbish. We're not into that. And I think that's where it's a hearts and minds game, where the average punter who father isn't Yidinji, let's say, or maybe they're Johnny Come Latelys. And that's fine too. You're under, as Colin would say, you're under my wing. And that's a wonderful place coming out of a love and kindness, but also respect for the law, saying if you're under my wing, you can't go out of that either, because I'm going to bring you back in.
Oh, look, there's so many protocols that are there. There's age limits, you know. There's mechanisms for when people get dementia or whatever, you know, where they lose their capacity to talk for country, you know, which is, that's happened, you know, not so far back with one of the Wright's Creek, a poor old fella, really great bloke, just lost his marbles, he got dementia, and he couldn't speak for country because he would have just given it away to anyone. So that was acknowledged, you know, at a number of the Canton government level meetings where we sit down and discuss these very issues, you know. It wasn't just, we don't just talk about it amongst ourselves. We invite the surrounding cantons to come together to talk with us at the table, come to the, and you actually, by the way, you get a free cup of tea there, which is pretty good. But this is where the thing is discussed, and, you know, we try and record all of it as best we can for prosperity, but, you know, also so that the younger generation, and it's all about learning, because no one knows all the law here. I doubt if anyone would say, I know everything, because a lot of it's been lost over the years, but the nuts and bolts of it still remains intact, which is the important part that maintains the nation's sovereignty.
Yeah, and that's what gives me the confidence, actually, to do what I'm doing and to know where I stand. You know, as a man, let's say, I know my place. That's fine. But I know the law. And as a government minister, I know my place and I know the law. And these things are really can be simple, you know. But the design, like you said, it's you know, wet season or dry season, or there's so many different laws within that. It's impossible. You're right. And even to the point where different families hold different pieces of the puzzle in terms of knowledge and story and healing, all that kind of stuff, it's all out there. But that's a lifetime's journey, and that's what makes us a wonderful place to live in, because there are people who had that knowledge, and it should be respected, and people should be hungry for it.
The biggest thing is, don't get mixed up in the native title arguments, which is what, you know, it's terrible stuff. I see families fighting and feuding over stuff that's inside Australia would be normal to them, but it's not normal back over in the tribal world, you know. That's what I'm saying, you know, we had to actually, because of native title and native title determination, we actually had to come together about this, about men speaking for country, because they had listed some women that could speak for country, and that just broke everything. We even put a determination, a decision and some paperwork into Land Council. So don't you dare cross that bridge. You are doing it, you know, multiple times with your assisting to get the native title over the line, and I tell you what, it was serious stuff. You know, there were police involved. There was everything. And they tried to say, no, we got every right as Land Council to keep putting the information out until the tribe had enough, until the mobs had enough. They went in and approached the Land Council. They put paperwork out to the world. Land Council does not speak for our laws and protocols. They talk about it, but they can't speak for it. And that's where, you know, at one of them Land Council meetings, it was quite a show. There was probably 40, 50 police outside. And in the end, at that native title or that native title meeting, the police had to escort Land Council out because a junior lawyer for Land Council, she was actually of Maori descent, she jumped one of the tables and was going to punch one of the elders. And I was amazed that she had the fortitude to do that. But in the end, after that, the police escorted all Land Council out. They took them all away and said, no, we... because Land Council were trying to get us thrown out. And at that meeting there, all of a sudden, they took the Land Council people away. Wonder why they done that, because this woman had broken every law and protocol known to Yidinji government, the one they talk about in the determination that men speak for country. And here we are, we've got a young foreign woman who's a lawyer inside Australia wanting to punch one of the elders. You know, it was just unbelievable to see. because Land Council didn't understand, Native Title doesn't understand the protocols that they're talking about inside these determinations.
Well, it can be blurred there, and Yirralum, I think one of the things that makes it wonderful to workplace here is that there's a simplicity to it all. Once you understand capacity and, you know, if you're wearing the Yidinji shirt, you play for Yidinji. If you're wearing an Australian shirt, you play for Australia or for Queensland or for the Rabbitohs or whoever it is. It's that simple.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Yeah, I'm fortunate enough, from my perspective anyway, I was born on Yidinji country. That doesn't make me a Yidinji tribal person, but it gives me connection to the land if I'm open to it. And from that perspective, I've had the opportunity to learn so much, you know, like what we're talking about now. And, you know, you get to a point from a child, you grow and you start to understand the things that, you know, it comes back to the land. If you can't show connection to the land through your lineage, which I can't, you know, mine's only a couple of generations, maybe half a dozen. There's no connection to country that I've got. So therefore, anything that I as an Australian citizen would claim to own, I don't. It belongs to the original owners. That's who it belongs to. So my house isn't mine. I might have a mortgage over it, but it's still not my house because it's on the lands of the people who were here before me. So, you know, absolutely, it is very simple, you know, because which identification, fortunately, am I pulling out? I've got a choice. And as so many other people in this continent who are traditional owners, the first owners, the original owners, past, present and future owners of this country can do, they can choose their citizenship. And so I can be Yidinji or I can be Australian, but I know which one rules the other. Yidinji's on top.
Yeah, and it's built there to bring peace and to harmonise any potential conflict or, you know, this is the whole intention. And, you know, it wasn't to create a separate system to bash the other one. It's not like it's not a competitive fight club of some sort, even though, you know, this you told a story about someone wanting to punch someone. That happens all the time, but in terms of where we're heading with it, as a government, it's more about the settlement of the past and securing the future.
Well, how do we live here? You know, are we going to defend our territory? You know, I've heard all sorts of claims over all the years that we've been involved in this. We will defend them. We will raise a standing army. Yes, got every right to raise a standing army if you so choose, if you've got the mechanism and the means to do so. But hang on a sec. Have a look around you. Get a reality check. How many Australians are there, you know, on the continent compared to the Aboriginal owners, the real owners? How many are there? Give us a rough percentage. What, 97 to 3%?
Well, who's better, the SAS or me with a rifle?
Well, I wouldn't trust you with one of them, but yeah. But you know what I mean? It's that reality check. Come back to reality. What are we going to do with the Australians? Where are they going in the world? 25 million people. Where are they going? What are you going to do with them? Send them to somewhere else? So you're going to pick up all the Australians on our part of the world and send them where? Send them to the neighbouring lot? That's insulting to the neighbouring lot. We just jammed them all into their world. Do we want to create conflict amongst the Aboriginal nations whose sovereignty is unceded, unextinguished? We want to do that? No, we don't. We want to be real in the world. We're not going to chuck out the Australians. We can't chuck them out. We're not going to do that. It's about settling the past, but working a way forward now so that there's a sharing of powers. This is what coexisting sovereignty is about. You know, Australia's not going to disappear, and nor are we. But we've got to work a mechanism out of how we're going to share power on the territory and who's it going to apply to and how's it going to apply to them. How do the two interact? You know, because Australia has been appointed the international actor for this part of the world. But we're still the domestic actor on our part here, and the two have to have a mechanism in place, and they call that a treaty, of, you know, some sort of formal agreement.
Exactly, and that mechanism is the SYG. Not because of me, not because of you, but because of the elders. And anything outside of that, good luck to you, because it's on thin ice. It's not even worth the paper it's written on, literally. I just think how wonderful that those families were when you did that. I was still down in Nambri territory then in Canberra, you know, acting and parading around in Parliament House. But that was done when I was down there. And when I come to learn about sovereignty and hear the position of where people are at, when I was approached by Tableland first and adopted in there, and then I was given name adopted here. So my allegiance is to the Yidinji Nation, not to the Commonwealth of Australia, It's very important. Those days are long gone. It's not because I don't like Australia, but there has to be true settlement, like you're saying. There has to be people that carry the Australian identity, that feel comfortable and can interact with the Yidinji world through, like you said, this formal agreement. You're listening to Blackall Trial Edition right across the country today. We'll be back with some final comments.
Hello, my name is Andrew, and I'm from Arnhem Land. My band called Andrew Guru Band, and you're listening to BBM 98.7.
Yes, it's a wonderful show today. It's given me a lot of food for thought, but a lot of good feelings. You know, last week, and I think there's someone else just rocked up now, we issued a lot of people with ID. These are people who are living on the streets. I think that's really good work. The Sovereign Yidinji Government is a charity. You can say that because we work for free here, right? But the thing is that we're helping all types of families with matters, private matters, some of them, but things of identity and, you know, they love coming to this place because they are disappointed with the Australian systems and the businesses there and some of the statutory bodies and things like that. And that's okay. You know, a lot of those people that work in those places, like I said, sometimes they're hamstrung. You know, political parties have their agendas and they'll go into XY organisation, change them and threaten them to withdraw funds, even though they're doing good work. But here, we don't have that. We're not threatened to withdraw funds because, you know, one, the Yidinji money is always going to be here, and two, we do it because people need it. And it's people that control government, not the other way around. That's the Yidinji design, by the way. That's always, it always was, always will be. And so some final comments. Yerulan, we'll start with you first.
No, like you said, we are a charity. We're here to support all the other nations of this continent and help them move forward if they see this as a way for them. So that offer stands, as always.
And that's true. I mean, we can't force it on anyone, right? So even people of Yidinji blood, let's say, if they don't want to be part of it, then that's fair enough too. They might be doing very well inside of Australia and they don't need to go back to the old law, or they think they're fulfilling the law there, or whatever it is. We can't really make judgments on that, but at the same time, you know, there is a design in place and a protocol in place, Ganyara.
Well, think about this. What percentage of the 3% are you? You know, if you're of Aboriginal heritage, what percentage are you? And, you know, look, you're not going to make any change. Even as the 3%, as the 5% of Australia or 10%, the majority always rule. You know, that's what democracy is all about. So consider what your real options are. Now, there are some well-to-do Aboriginal people, and I take my hat off to them. As Australians, they've done well, and good on them, and, you know, good luck for the hard work. You know, this is how I see things. So understand where you are, where your real authority lies, and at your what capacity do you have to be in to be over there.